National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The nation continues to mourn the deaths of two children and injuries to at least 18 more children and adults after the attack on an Annunciation church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Questions are being asked about the alleged shooter, the key issues of safety and protection, and funding. This week on Register Radio, we're joined by Jonathan Liedl, Register Senior Editor, with the latest. And then, Teresa Tomeo, host of EWTN's Catholic Connection, tells us about the EWTN radio conference here in the D.C. area and answers a question of what makes Catholic radio Catholic. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. I'm here in our Washington, D.C. studio with Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning, Matthew.
Well, the violent attack on Annunciation Catholic Church shocked Americans in general and Catholics in particular. The two children were killed in the shooting. Their names were 8-year-old Fletcher Alexander Merkel and 10-year-old Harper Lillian Moiske. Both reportedly died in the pews of the church. At least 15 other children between the ages of 6 and 15 were injured, and 3 adults in their 80s who were attending the Mass were also wounded. The FBI has declared this horrendous attack domestic terrorism and a hate crime against Catholics, but many questions are being raised about the alleged shooter, funding for protection and security, and even how the media has responded. Jonathan Liedl has been covering this heartbreaking story. Jonathan, welcome back to Register Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jonathan, here we are just a few days removed from the attack. Can you describe what the situation is at this point as we're recording today in Minneapolis?
Well, I think that the heartbreak continues after this tragic shooting. I think there's obviously, you know, first thought is with the victims, those killed and those affected by this. And I'm from the Twin Cities, from Minneapolis, and I know there's ongoing prayer vigils are continue to happen at different churches throughout the Archdiocese. And so that is definitely a top priority. But I think there are a lot of questions also about, as you alluded to, Matthew, the motives of this attack, how did this happen? What's the story there? What can we learn about that? And then also a lot of questions about how can we prevent this going forward? So there are certainly conversations related to gun control, and there are also a lot of conversations related to security. This is obviously not the first school shooting. It is the first, we believe, mass shooting at a Catholic school during an all-school mass at the church. And so it is raising, again, questions of whether there needs to be more protection at these kinds of places of worship and Catholic schools, and whether that funding is equitable compared to other sorts of schools.
Jonathan, before we get into some of those issues, talk to us about your personal reaction to this. You're a Minneapolis native. Are you familiar with this parish, the school?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah. So I lived in the Twin Cities from basically 2015 to 2025. Annunciation Church. It's South Minneapolis. It's about 6 miles from downtown. One of my best friends lives about a mile away from there. I've driven by the church a number of times, even though I haven't been to Mass. For listeners to kind of give a picture of the place we're talking about. This is a very, obviously Minneapolis is in the news and has been in the news in recent years with a lot of difficulties there. But this part of South Minneapolis, I think, is just it's a very tranquil place, right? We're talking about tree-lined streets. It's near to some of the well-known and popular lakes in Minneapolis, like Nokomis, Lake Harriet. It's really a peaceful place to raise a family. And so I think that's just the backdrop of, what was really a shocking and disturbing and tragic event that unfolded. And yeah, I've talked to a handful of friends. I've seen a lot of posts on social media, and whether someone, belonged to Annunciation Parish or not, I think the whole archdiocese right now is hurting. I think there's just a real sense of shock that this could happen here, right? We hear about these different shootings in places like Uvalde, Texas, or in Nashville, Tennessee, and now it's happened in Minneapolis. So I think people are processing that. I know there's a lot of appreciation for Archbishop Bernard Hebda, the local ordinary who, you know, expressed in his first comments that his own heart was broken, and he begged people for continued prayers for the victims and for the archdiocese as a whole. So it's certainly obviously no one would wish that this would ever happen to their home, to their community. And I think the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis is a very tight-knit, it's an archdiocese, it's big, but it's a very lively and tight-knit Catholic community. And I know people are rallying around each other and rallying around Christ and his church right now.
Jonathan, the shooter's been identified as 23-year-old Robin Westman, a biological male who was previously known as Robert. And we know that court records show that Robert filed to have a change of name in 2019 and began identifying as a woman. The alleged shooter also turned the gun on himself after the killing. What else do we know about this person, and certainly what possible motives may have been, given that the FBI has declared this domestic terrorism and a hate crime?
Yeah, the FBI has said that. Meanwhile, other politicians are sort of saying, we'll never know what the motive was. But I think the first thing you can say is that this individual is deeply, deeply disturbed. You pick that up if you read any of the manifesto he left behind. You pick that up if you watch the 15-minute video that he recorded the night before the shooting. So this is a person whose mother actually worked at the school and himself had been a student there. But my takeaways, yeah, you're right. Like the person, Robert Westman, identified as trans, although in the manifesto wrote about how they had regrets about, transitioning, you know, regrets that they'd been brainwashed, by that ideology. At the same time, I did watch the 15-minute video the night before the shooting that the alleged shooter recorded, and there just an immense amount of nihilism. That's the word that I would use. A lot of people are pointing out that he said hateful things about Spanish peoples, used slurs against Black people, but then also, you know, shared disdain, animosity for President Trump. How do you know, where do you put this person on the political spectrum? A lot of hatred, right? And but at the root of it all, from what I've seen, is a hatred of God, right? Like a real you know, there were multiple things written on weapons, things the shooter was saying in this video. There of course is an image of the shooter with a shooting target with Jesus Christ, an image of Christ placed where the head would be of that. So an immense amount of nihilism. It seems like a real a hatred of God, like a real sense, a lack of purpose, a lack of meaning in this person's life. At the same time, in the 4-page letter left behind, you know, still expressing his love for his family and his parents and apologizing for the chaos that this would bring in their own life, but also at the same time, just a real desire to inflict pain and suffering upon others, which has certainly happened.
So many themes to explore in this terrible case. One of them, as we mentioned, is funding. So, Jonathan, your piece for the Register the day of the shooting focused on sort of the legislative history of Minnesota providing funds for security at schools, but not at religious institutions, not at non-public schools. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so obviously we've been dealing with this tragic phenomenon of school shootings for decades now in the U.S. And so Minnesota in 2019 passed legislation, the Safe Schools legislation, which provided state funding for schools to go towards security, to go towards securing, you know, doors, to hiring resource officers, liaisoning with law enforcement, also psychological counseling, emergency response, just a whole, here's money that you can use to help make your school secure. But that legislation in 2019 did not include non-public schools. So it did not include Catholic schools, for instance. And in 2022, in the wake of, legislation was proposed during the legislative session in 2022 to remedy that, to provide the same level of funding per pupil to Catholic schools that, that public schools received. And the Minnesota bishops made that a priority. They even, after the legislation stalled in the 2022 session, they implored Governor Walz to call a special session that summer so that legislation could pass, especially after the shootings at Robb Elementary in Uvalde, Texas happened that May, I believe. Didn't happen then. And then the following year, the governor set aside $50 million for grants for security and cybersecurity in schools. But in the budget item, non-public schools, again, were not listed as eligible for that. So again, the bishops, the Minnesota Catholic Conference, which is their public policy voice, implored the state legislatures and the governor to address that, but they went unheeded. So it's in the, you know, that's in the background. Obviously, we're not saying that if that money had been passed, that this would have been prevented or anything like that. But I think it just goes to highlight these continuing issues of sort of a lack of equity, you know, for non-public schools. The students who go there to these schools are the students of taxpayers. So the idea that public money going towards school security would not also go to them, I think is deeply upsetting to people, and it's especially deeply upsetting in the wake of a tragedy like this.
Yeah, and we know that as of this Friday, Governor Walz announced that he would be sending state law enforcement personnel to help with security efforts around the school and religious sites. So we'll have to see as the story develops and look forward to ongoing reporting from you, Jonathan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. Next up, we talk with Teresa Tomeo about the EWTN Radio Catholic Conference here in the D.C. area.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, your host, with Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, in studio in Washington, D.C., and we're joined by a very special guest today, Teresa Tomeo, who needs no introduction, but you're going to get one anyway.
Okay.
Actually, you can introduce yourself better than ever I could, but go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I'm happy to be here, of course, with EWTN Radio for Catholic Connection, and I love being here when the weather's beautiful and there's no snow, even though I love to cover the March for Life. It was very nice being outside and being warm and not being freezing, but it's great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time because I know that you're here in town,
right,
as we're recording for the EWTN Catholic Radio Conference.
Mm-hmm.
That's taking place actually in Northern Virginia.
Yes.
What is the importance of a radio conference like this?
Well, I think for the radio affiliates, it's really important because they come and they can just have it. First of all, they can have a retreat, a pilgrimage, which is beautiful, and can get them away from the everyday details of running a radio station, which can be, you know, very complicated and stressful sometimes because there's a lot of fundraising involved and other issues. But I think also it reminds them that they're part of a family and they're not alone in the radio mission. And the network does such a beautiful job of bringing people together that are really good at what they do and offer their advice, you know, at the conference. And so,
and
for
you're
example,
one of them.
Thank you. But yeah, but I mean, it's a great thing to do, and it's really to show them how much we appreciate carrying our programming. And we give them the programming for free. Mother Angelica obviously wanted to do that, but to see the people that are carrying your shows and to see the affiliates grow over the years. Now we're at, what, over 600 brick-and-mortar stations, not to mention all the coverage we have on the Internet and on Sirius. So I think it's very affirming for all of us, but I think it's really helpful. There's several people here who are with new affiliates, relatively new affiliates, that I hadn't met until this week. And so it's been very encouraging, I think, for all of us to get together.
Yeah, what I was curious to know, what do you get asked when you're in these gatherings, and what wisdom can you share some of the younger people who are in Catholic radio now?
I think probably the biggest question, and I'm going to be discussing this on a panel with Matt Swaim and Anna Mitchell and Ace McKay. We're talking about Ready, Set, Show, talking about show prep. And I think most of the questions I get are, how do you prepare for a two-hour show every day? What's that like? And a lot of it has to do with how do you keep a balance as a host because of all the stories we have to cover. Many of the stories are bad news, of course, including some of the bad news that we got this week, is some of the breaking news stories. How do you do that as a host? How do you balance yourself? How do you keep your faith with everything that's going on? Because we do report on everything. And, you know, the Register, we have Catholic News Agency, and we're all part of the same media family. And so I go to the Register, I go to Catholic News Agency. Of course, I look at Vatican News, and I look at several secular sites as well to see what's going on. And sometimes, you know, it can be overwhelming, but you just keep doing what you have to do and always keep your eyes on Christ. And so I think the best advice I have for people is to always be prepared. You know, it's live radio, things can happen, but always try to have a balance. Don't give too much bad news. And if there is bad news, always remind people that there's hope. Those are most of the questions I get.
Well, you've been a journalist for decades.
Yes. And I'm only 25, so I can't figure out the math. But yeah, actually, I graduated from college in 1981 with my journalism degree. So this is 44 years.
44 years.
Yes.
So you've seen pretty much everything, especially the evolution of social media, of social communications, of journalism. Let's talk, though, about Catholic radio.
Mm-hmm.
First, it seems almost countercultural to still rely or even think about terrestrial radio.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it seems to be enduring.
It's not only enduring, it's thriving. If you look at the research and statistics, I think it's up to – and actually, last week was National Radio Day. They had a day during the week there was National Radio Day. So, of course, I talked about Marconi, right?
Yes.
The Italian who invented radio. But in that story that I saw, they had the percentage of how many people listen to radio every day in the United States. I think it's something like 88% of Americans still listen to terrestrial radio. And I think it's because it's such a personal medium. And yes, I know we can carry our cell phones around with us anywhere. But if you're a talk show host and you're talking to people, radio hits one-on-one. And so I think there's just something unique about it that people are so used to having it. And it's a different – I know we have podcasts and we have streaming, which is fabulous. But radio still is a great outlet for people. A very personal medium. It's doing really, really well.
And to a lot of people's surprise, Gen Zs.
Yes.
About 55% of Gen Zs actually use terrestrial radio.
Yes. And
it would be almost, it would not occur to you.
Right. It seems like it would just be just the opposite. But the important point about Catholic radio as well is it is such a, a shelter for people. Not that they're hiding. But they know that if they turn on EWTN, one of our affiliates, and they're listening to the morning shows, for example, Annie does the news as I do for my show, they know they're going to get news, but they know they're going to get balance. Obviously, you're going to have church teaching, but you're going to get really good journalism. Mm-hmm. And that's a thing that we're not seeing as much of as we used to in the secular media. The secular media, in addition, we can always talk about the bias all day long, but I'm finding a lot of laziness. I see a lot of laziness. We had that story, I don't know if you saw the Free Press, freepress.com, that did the investigation on the reporters who ran with 12 fake stories on the situation in Gaza. And so I did something on my show on that saying, look, why did they have to have a fake picture of Gaza? There's so much evidence that there's a crisis there. And when you get the word out that they were using fake photos, it not only hurts the industry of journalism, but it hurts the cause because people become cynical. And they say, well, it's not really that bad in Gaza. I don't have to support the bishops in raising the money. I don't have to care about what's going on there. Maybe the Pope doesn't really know. That the quality of journalism, I think, that we deliver and the way they edit the stories, and I noticed this because of my background, it's really good, solid news writing. Much better, I would say, with some of even some of the bigger secular publications. And I think because we are ethical and because we're Catholic, we feel a responsibility to the truth and to accuracy. Because Catholic Church has so many beautiful teachings on the media. So I think we are different in the fact that we still give people the news. We let them know what's happening in the world, but then we give them really great stories about how the faith is being shared. or what's happening in a particular diocese, or what is the Pope doing, or some great apologist comes in for an interview. It's a lot of great variety, but we're giving people truth all the time.
I wanted to ask you about your fans.
My fans? I have fans? I didn't even know I had fans. I know. Well, besides you guys?
Yeah, I was going to say you're sitting with two of them.
I know you have a lot out there. And do you hear from them? And what do you learn about them?
That's such a great question because it's so personal. I was telling Matthew before we started the show that when I was at the Basilica for the mass that we had with the radio conference, a woman came in from the suburbs. She listens to us every day. And she came in specifically to meet me. She's a widow, lost her husband recently. And she's a Carmelite, a Third Order Carmelite, and she wanted to meet me in person. And she came looking for me, and she went to Mass, and I walked out of the Lower Crypt Church this morning, and she was talking to some of her friends from Guadalupe Radio. And she said, "Do you know where Teresa Tamayo is?" And as soon as she said that, I happened to walk out. She practically bowled me over. She came up to me, and she hugged me, and she said, "I can't tell you. I had to drive all the way in. I just wanted to meet you when I heard you were going to be here to tell you that you have gotten me out of bed every morning." She says, "My husband died recently. You helped me put one foot in front of the other." And to me, that, of course, I started crying. She started crying. That's so personal that someone would share that much. And I think we think we don't make that much of a difference. But when someone comes up to you, and that was the second person this morning that did that, and says, "You make such a difference in my life. I listen to you every day. I go to work with you in the morning, or I have you on in my headset." It's a very, very personal relationship with the listeners, which I love. And they tell me a lot. It's amazing how much people feel like that's the comfort level they have with us, because we're talking about the reality of salvation in their souls and their lives, and we're giving them tools. So I think they get much more personal than they would with just, let's say, someone who might be on the secular or a secular radio show.
Well, and that begs the question, what exactly makes Catholic radio Catholic?
Well, I think we bring the truth, the fullness of the truth. I think we do it in a very real way, and we're not trying to be one way to the left or one way to the right, because if you're doing true Catholicism, you're balanced. The church is always balanced. And so I think that's what we do really well, is we present the fullness of the truth, and we're very honest with people. And when there's bad news in the church, we report it. And when there's good news, we report it. But being Catholic means that we are educating people and sticking up for the faith and speaking the truth, as Mother Angelica wanted, every single day.
You know, a lot of people are in their cars, right, when they're listening to you, and mm-hmm. there's just that sort of intimacy that I think is different about Catholic radio. And as even opposed to different kinds of radio where they're really there to entertain you.
Right.
But Catholic radio is different.
And I think you have when you are proclaiming the name of Jesus, when you're talking about the Eucharist, when you're talking about the saints, when you're reading scripture or quoting a scripture verse, when that goes on in the airwaves, there's something, well, obviously it's a word of God. You know, and so it's very, very important what we're doing, putting that out there. And even if no one is listening at the particular moment, that's going out to millions of people around the country and around the world. So there's that aspect of it as well. But we're talking to people's hearts. And I think being real with people, not that you have to spill your guts every single day and tell them every single detail about what went wrong in your life, but being real, I'm going to talk about this at the panel, that you have to be sincere with people, because they can spot a phony a mile away. I even had one of our fellow radio friends from Seattle. He met me in person. He goes, "Wow, you sound like you do just on the radio." I said, "Well, yeah, what were you expecting? Some different persona or something?" Because, you know, this is who I am. And it's a very, very, I think, important aspect of the business that it's a business, right, because we have to pay bills and whatnot, but it's a ministry, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, and you can't fake it.
I can't. Maybe some people can, but I can't. I never could. I just can't, because I would explode. That's just not how I am. I'm not made that way.
Yeah. You know?
And I think anybody who is true to their craft, I'm going to be opening up my panel with a quote from Edward R. Murrow about sincerity and believability and truth, and you have to start with the truth. And that's what matters. Mm-hmm. You know, people will turn it off if they don't think you're you know, blowing smoke, or if you're up there and you're saying that your life is perfect and God's answered every single one of your prayers and God talks to you all the time. Give me a break. I mean, seriously, you know, unless you're Mother Teresa or someone else, but even Mother Teresa would talk about her own trials, right, in her own life. So, but you have to be real with people.
Yeah.
Well, talking about being real,
okay.
Before we let you go, we have to talk about a little venture that is going to happen next year.
So excited. We are doing a pilgrimage. Dr. Bunsen and myself, along with his beautiful bride Bonnie and my husband Deacon Dom, we are, and I love this itinerary, so thank you for all your great suggestions, Mr. Papal Biographer.
Thank you.
We are doing a beautiful pilgrimage, and it's filling up very quickly next year, next October. We're calling it La Dolce Fide, the sweetness of faith in the footsteps of the popes, and we are going to be obviously in Rome, going to Castel Gandolfo, we're going to Viterbo, Orvieto, Arezzo. I think we're stopping in Assisi as well. So we are really going to be learning about different areas of Italy that were very particular to the popes over the centuries.
Yeah,
and so we have
the place where the conclave was
the
born,
conclave,
the
yes,
first conclave,
Viterbo,
was held.
And then we're going up to Arezzo, which also is very tied to the papacy, which is a beautiful Tuscan town. So it's nice because they get three regions. They get Lazio with Rome and Castel Gandolfo. And Viterbo, and then they get Umbria with Orvieto and Assisi, and then we go to Tuscany for Arezzo. So that's next October, and you can go to my website, teresatamio.com, under events, or ctscentral.net. But if you're interested, you need to call or write quickly because it's filling up.
It is, happily.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me. It was great.
But as always, thank you for listening to Register Radio this week and every week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, go to ncregister.com. Until next week, this is Matthew Bunsen on behalf of Shannon Mullen and our producer, Michael McCall. Take care, and God bless.